back to the bin.
Despite my very close friendship with yourself, I am not all that cheap. I'm willing to spend money on things, but there's certain things that have been free in the past, and I just have this problem with paying money for them all of a sudden.
I hear that.
That said, I did, while I said the same thing about radio, I do pay for, for the Sirius XM radio. So, eventually I come on board and I give up. But in the beginning, I have to fight the fight.
Yep.
How have you been?
And free TV is good enough, too. I don't need to pay for this dumb cable and streaming stuff. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm. And yet I pay for way more of that. Way more of that than I should.
I don't want to know.
No, you don't. It would just gall you.
Problem is, Verizon keeps on. Well, if you get this deal and you get that deal, and I don't want to say this, but M is still on our cell phone package, and so he's sort of like, once you start, you can't get him off. I think that's the.
When we went on our last vacation, we made friends with some people who were of a similar age bracket, and they have two adult sons. And I was talking to, about like planning for retirement and cutting down expenses and all that. And he said one of the things they looked at was they still had the two sons who were both in their late 20s, early 30s on their cell phone package. So they said, this is whatever that works out to, like $100 a month that they shouldn't have to pay anymore, that the kids take care of themselves. So they said, when they generally would have dinner like once a week with the whole family. And when they had dinner, they said, by the way, and they were expecting, they didn't know what the reaction was going to be. And he said, they told him, we're going to take you off the package. You're going to have to get your own coverage, blah, blah, blah. And the two of them just kind of laughed and said, we were wondering how long it was going to take for you to
freaking time.
Yeah, we already feel like we got away with it for years. So.
Yep. But it was fair for a little while. Emmett got Netflix first. So we were on their Netflix. So it was all,
Yeah, that levels it off. I'm waiting for the person, because the one service I don't have that I would, but I'm against just having more services, is Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting for the person who says, here's the password, just sign into mine. And that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, at some point it's going to come through either my cable package or the cell phone is going to offer a bundle with Paramount Plus and so-and-so for this. And then I'm going to end up with two that I never watch, but the deal was so good, Paul. How could I resist?
Verizon Fios offers a package with the Disney, Disney, Hulu, and ESPN.
Yeah. That's what
but when I called them up about it, it's the price is the same as what I'm paying anyway. Like, they're not offering any real bargain. It's not like, if you subscribe to Verizon, you get this. Yeah, it's exactly what I'm already paying for those things. So it's like, all right, I'll just keep what I have.
That ain't right.
The only plus about that is consolidating the payment, where you're only making one instead of multiple.
Right.
And every time I look to cancel Netflix, Tina comes up with a series. Well, I want to watch this.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we'll keep it another month and another month and another month.
The problem is I bounce around between Netflix and Prime and Disney Plus. I do sort of watch them all eventually, and I know people would say, well, I'm going to get the 1 3-month preview and then cancel it the next year, and I did that with
Apple Plus.
I got the three months and then I canceled it.
And I did Peacock. I did the Black Friday special. It was $20 for the year,
right?
So I signed up for the year at Black Friday, but come this Black Friday, unless they're offering the same deal, I'm going to cancel that.
Yeah. So once they get you.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. If you haven't figured it out, I'm Paul Spataro, and I've been talking to my good friend, Professor Alan Quatermain, Middleton.
Glad to be back on the show, Paul. It is always good to get the call. Yeah,
it is. It's good to make the call. Shouldn't you be Quatermain? Wouldn't that just fit?
You know, branding. Branding. It's all about the branding. I'm stuck with this one for 12 years now, buddy. What am I going to do? Change it now?
No, I'm talking about your actual name. You've been stuck with it a lot more than 12 years.
That's true.
But just Quartermain just seems to fit your personality so much better.
It is. Yeah, look. If you want to take it up with my late parents, Paul, then I guess you can.
I'll be there soon enough. I'll send your regards when I get there.
Gonna say hello. No, it's always good to be here. It's great that since I've graduated from being your intern, I no longer have to refer to you as Mr. Spatero Esquire, sir.
You could leave off the sir now.
And not having to stare at your shoes when I address you again. That's a nice change. I appreciate how much you've mellowed over the years.
You don't have to stare at my shoes, but do not make eye contact.
Oof, anything but that. Anything but that.
I have a good friend of mine who has had a rescue dog, and the dog seemed as friendly as could be. And then I'm petting it and playing with it and everything, and he was like, he says, just don't make eye contact because he'll take that as a threat. Meanwhile, I'm staring it right in the face when he said it. I felt like in Ghostbusters, do not look directly into the trap. I looked into the trap. Thankfully, the dog didn't do anything, but I
Yes.
just, it was like a frightening moment when he was like,
Little
do
late.
not say, make eye contact.
It's a little late now, buddy.
So, anybody listening, if you've listened enough, somehow that Professor Allen and I always end up with a theme whenever we do our books. And I think our theme today brings up the philosophical question that everybody wants an answer to. And that question is, in the future, what will a quarter be worth?
Not much.
How many comics will you be able to get for a quarter in the 30th century?
Oh boy. We will have eliminated paper by then. We won't have to worry about floppies, so that's good. That'll be an improvement.
So, as you may have picked up, our theme today is future teams. And Professor Allen picked a Guardians of the Galaxy book, and I picked a Legion of Superheroes book. And as always, I leave it to the good professor to decide who's going to go first.
Well, as always, I picked mine first and you just followed. Plus, I've got the Marvel this time, even though yours is older, but I think on two out of three, I win.
You always win.
Oh,
You're like General Zod. Right, so go to it, my friend.
that's right. We are looking at Guardians of the Galaxy 30, cover dated November 1992, at the then shocking cover price of $1.25. Now, as I always do, I ran that through an online inflation calculator, and that 125 with 3 decades of inflation in the US economy would work out to $2.85 for a cover price in today's value. And of course, there are no new comic books priced at 285, so why do I even bring it up if not just to sadden us all? So, the cover by Kevin West and Steve Montana was pretty simple. And I think I mean that in a good way. Got a white background and the red and yellow logo stands out. We have Major Victory in the center of the page in his Captain America cosplay. He's walking towards us and away from his teammates. And he has a simple declarative two-word message for the team. I quit. The
And the
story.
dramatic music there.
I know it is. I'm heartbroken by the cover. Actually, I thought the cover was pretty good. I don't know what you thought, but I thought it was pretty good.
We'll get there.
Build the dramatic tension. Have you been doing this for 15 years or so?
At
Because
least.
you're pretty good.
It's kind of scary how long I've been doing this already.
The story Arguing a Called Strike was written by Michael Gallagher with art by Kevin West and Steve Montano. And I have to admit, right off the start, I am not overly familiar with the works of any of those three gentlemen. It looks like the writer, Michael Gallagher, spent the majority of his career in like kids comics. He worked for Archie, I think Mad as well, and also wrote a lot of Star comics for Marvel. And with the exception of a handful of what ifs, this run on Guardians of the Galaxy is certainly his only sustained run in mainstream hero books. So this is issue 30. His first issue was the one right before this, and he stayed on the book until it ended at issue 62. This is actually the first issue with this whole creative team, starting here at 30, and they all stay through issue 62. The website Comic Vine had a pretty decent summary for this issue, which was the jumping off point for what I have for us here. And we start in the 20th century in Avengers Mansion. The five main Guardian members are present. Major Victory, a.k.a. Vance Astro, Charlie 27, Alita Starhawk, and Nikki. And I don't think I said this specifically, but those were the characters on the cover as well. Major Victory and Charlie 27 are in one heck of a shouting match on page one. A plan has been developed for the team to launch a preemptive strike against the Badoon homeworld. The Badoon, would go on in the future to slaughter everyone on Mercury and Pluto and Jupiter. Nikki points out that the Badoon perpetrated a genocide on her parents, her siblings, and her friends. This will prevent that from happening. Now, Astro is not a fan of this idea and claims that Starhawk is manipulating them all. Can't you see what he's doing? He's left behind while the other Guardians transport to their ship, the Dry Dock. We move to the Earth of the 31st century, as promised by Mr. Spatero, Esquire, Sir, in a remote wilderness that was once Eastern Europe. A group of mutants are interrupted by the arrival of a mysterious man in an awesome green cloak. And just between us, Paul, if I knew this book had a Doctor Doom cameo in it, I would have saved it for my own show. Back in the present of 1992, Major Victory has a chat with Jarvis and decides to use the interstellar radio to let the Badoons know that the Guardians are on their way for battle. He can't just allow them to be wiped out, no matter how much damage they will eventually do. Yeah, it's a sci-fi take on the classic baby Hitler conundrum. But as the radio beam heads toward that star system, a strange phenomenon occurs. The beacon bristles with raw energy as a mysterious entity latches onto it. On board Dry Dock, we see that there's a battle for the control of Starhawk's body. Between Stokkar and Alita, Starhawk exits the ship and exits the issue at this point as well. After a flashback showing the atrocities committed by the Badoon against Nikki's people, the Badoons received that adulterated radio transmission because evidently in the future, radio waves travel faster than starships, faster than light. Science, Paul. It's science.
It's clearly got basis in fact.
Makes sense to me. The transmission explodes on reception, injuring a Badoon warrior, causing enormous power to surge through his body. Well, Major Victory reminisces in the 20th century about the good old days of the Guardians. The authorities of the 31st century are noticing their absence, specifically during a fight with a bunch of Punisher wannabes. And I mean, literally, they are wearing the Punisher's outfit. Where the blazes are the Guardians of the Galaxy when we need them? And in the last scene back at Avengers Mansion, Major Victory is conflicted. One tough decision, and I solve it by running away. He knows that Captain America would know how to solve this crisis. only I could seek the wisdom of the man I've tried to emulate over the years. I'd give anything to speak with him for just a... And at that point, a hand reaches out to touch his shoulder, or his soldier, either way, actually, in this case. And on the last page, we see Cap himself. Son, I'm never too old to help a friend in need. To be continued. And I thought on that last page, I thought, I'm Major Victory and you're Cap.
Because I'm older?
I've just been trying to emulate you for years and you're older. But okay, mostly well, one of those.
This is an interesting series for me because I am a big fan of the original incarnation of the Guardians. And I'm talking about when they appeared in Marvel Superheroes back in 68, I think it was. When they appeared in Marvel 2-in-1, when they appeared in The Defenders, and when they appeared in The Avengers, before they had their own series. Yep. Then they eventually had their own series in Marvel Presents, I believe it was, which then went on to this series. I have not read this series, so I can't... I think I've read all of the Marvel Presents issues, but I don't think I've read beyond that. And at some point, I decided that this was a quarter bin slash half dollar bin and maybe even up to dollar bin target to complete the series, and then I would do it as a reading project. I think I currently have about 3 issues to find to complete the series, and then I will do that reading project. So this is my first... I own this issue, but this is the first time that I ever paged through it. I felt slightly lost. I'm not a huge fan of the 90s-ization, you like that word, of Vance Astro.
Oh, yeah.
I would have rather he stayed as the, you know, the foil-encased time traveler that he was.
Because is he channeling Cap or is he channeling Rambo?
Yeah, a little of each. A little from column A, a little from column B, and possibly a Broadway dancer as well.
Three great tastes that taste great together.
Because it does, his costume does appear to be almost, you know, Broadway dancing type. You know, you can almost see him doing jazz hands.
Well, let me tell you how I came to select this issue.
Let me see if I could jump in here. I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version. You found it in a quarter bin.
close. It was given to me by a lovely listener. But specifically to choose it for this episode, because, you know, look, when you get the chance to be on bins, there are a number of ways to go. And over the many, many years, many, many appearances, I've used a number of selection, you know, criteria. Sometimes I just pick a book I think you'll like. Sometimes I pick a book to punk you. Okay, that's happened once or twice. I'm looking at you, Abbott and Costello, or whichever one of those ones we did.
The Honeymooners,
yep. Sometimes I just pick the most recent book I've read. Sometimes I pick one I think, you know, is good, right? But this one, I just went back to the old back to the bins notion of good old-fashioned comic book back issues. So I took the first 5 books off my reading stack. And then I picked the one with the highest number, which is kind of weird because 30 is a pretty low issue number. I mean, you obviously, you know, dominated, you know, that category. You shamed me with that one. But I don't know if you find this for back to the bins. I find that on the quarter bin, I cover a lot of number ones and a lot of single issue comics. And there are logistical reasons why they're overrepresented in cheap bins. You know, for sure. But it is kind of weird that issue 30 was the largest of those just sort of random 5 issues that I picked. But here we are. And that's how we got to this issue today.
Okay. Well, you know, do you have familiarity with the Guardians beyond the movies?
Not a lot. I was going to say when I was prepping for this, my original line was going to be that I've seen more Guardians of the Galaxy movies than I've read Guardians of the Galaxy issues. That's probably not true, but what is true is I've spent more time watching Guardians of the Galaxy movies than I've spent reading Guardians of the Galaxy comics. I probably read, a dozen or so, and some of them were from the more recent Abnett and Lanning era, and I read one of
Which is a
their
different
trades at
animal.
least. Totally different. Yeah, totally different. So just based on the name, put it that way. But I certainly have
Right.
not read anything from this run.
So, do you have basic familiarity with the characters presented here?
Through general comic osmosis.
See, I mean, I know Vance Astro again.
Yeah.
I prefer him to be the time torn, Reynolds wrap wearing dude
Yeah.
who if you take that off, he's going to turn to dust because he's so old. Charlie 27, Starhawk, Nikki, those are all ones that are common to me. This cat dude, I don't really know.
No, yeah.
And then when we go to the future, I don't think I know any of these characters, and I find it somewhat annoying. That apparently there's the female Wolverine type character,
Yes, oh, yeah.
whether she's got a relationship, long term that she's somehow an ancestor of his, or if it's just somehow she's recreated that look. It feels just like such a money grab to me by Marvel to have a
Yeah.
character like that in here that it turns me off a little bit right off the bat.
Yeah, in one like this where you're really are pulling a book at random, you sort of have to figure out what's the main through line. Let me try to stick with that, because they're throwing a lot at you, which is which is okay. They're building a universe has been built or jumping around. There can be something exciting about that if you're bought into it. But there were some pages I skimmed past. Let's go with that, okay?
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. I would say the when we went to the future and we saw that stuff, I didn't linger on it long, let's put it
Yeah,
that way.
yeah,
But
yeah.
I'm sure your jaw dropped open when you saw the obvious Doctor Doom reference.
I was not expecting. I would have read this book sooner if I'd known that. I'm not saying that panel is the highlight of the book, but it's close to the highlight of the book.
Sarcasm aside, it might be.
It might be.
Now, I know again, we've talked about how you're a story first guy. And we'll talk a little bit more about the story in a moment, but what did you think of the art?
I really liked the cover. There were some elements about that I really liked. Inside, considering it's a book from the 90s, I would say it could have been worse. Is that a positive way to say it? It was
Yeah, that is.
fine. It was fine. Again, it's tricky with so many characters and locations and stuff that you're not familiar with.
See, and this is going to be one of the instances where I'm going to kind of turn my normal criticism upside down a little bit. Usually, I find myself frequently saying, I like the penciling, I don't like the inking. And I see where the inking hurts it. In this particular instance, it's not that I dislike the pencils, but they are 90s-ified. And I'm not a huge fan of that particular look. But I think the inking honestly has just a little bit more attention to detail than I see in a lot of these 90s
Okay,
books. So I think that does bring it up a level for the time that it came out. I'm still not totally on board with this. I like the panel layouts. It's
Right.
dynamic and it's interesting as you're going through it. It keeps you kind of focused on what's going on and moving forward with the story. So I like
Yeah.
that. I am.
I thought the space stuff was good. I thought the spaceships were good. So I like those sort of the future-y elements, the sci-fi elements at least.
Yeah, I thought the Badoon were drawn well. I don't like the character model on what is it, what do they call a Major Victory?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vance Astro, whatever you want to
Yeah.
call him. I don't like the character model that they came up with on that. So that's not a fault of the artist unless he's the one who designed this particular look. But
Do you
that's just
mean
more.
do you mean the costume?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like the look. And it's, you know, that's I'm going to say that's an editorial decision, not an art decision.
I would assume so.
So overall, I think the art, you know, it's pretty good. And again, it's not so much that I'm criticizing the penciling, but I'm giving more credit to the inking than I normally would because, again,
Interesting, yeah.
I think it looks to me like it's drawn in that very, very loose 90s style as far as the penciling goes, and it looks like the inking tightened it up a little bit. So
Right.
to me, that's a plus.
I do like on some of these pages, you do get the old asterisks, editor's note saying, you know, this occurred, you know, 5 issues ago, or this occurred earlier in the run. So that's helpful in terms of explaining, you know, these Punisher guys and some of the other elements. So again,
I'm going to be interested when
that's
I
from a
do this
bygone
reading
day,
project.
Paul. That's from a
Oh,
bygone day.
absolutely. It's a day that I miss. I'm going to be interested in seeing when I do my reading project, when I obtain those last few issues and I sit down and I read this through, if it's going to change my opinion at all, if I'm going to think more highly or less highly of what they're doing here. And it's something where when I get there, I may look to revisit this on the show. So
Nice,
that's got some
nice.
interest to me. I mean, there's definitely some things going on. You know, I know it's a little cliche, but I always enjoy the philosophical question of, you know, would you kill baby Hitler? I always find that to be somewhat, you know, it's an interesting concept because I don't think there is a good answer.
Right. That's what makes a good philosophical conundrum.
Yes. So, you know, doing that with the Badoon. Now, I don't see the Badoon as having the innocence of a newborn baby, but just the same, they haven't done, you know, there's like thoughts about we're watching, I can't even remember what, some TV show my wife and I were watching, and someone had like a list of people that they wanted to eliminate. And the list was seen and the police were notified and they were like, you know, you need to take him in and whatever. And they were like, you know, we can't arrest him for wishing people were dead.
Right.
You know, until he actually does something, we can't arrest him. It's just not how it works. You know, and there've been a lot of, you know, philosophical things with that, like with the mind police kind of thing.
Right.
You know, that I think that's I
Pre-crime
can't.
and the Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report is what I'm thinking of. So it's another interesting philosophical debate. So here we have, you know, we're combining the two, really. We're taking the Badoon, who are not necessarily a nice group, but who have not yet performed the atrocities, and saying, you know, can you just eliminate them to avoid those atrocities in the future? And then based on the way comic book time travel works, I think if they do eliminate them, they're not eliminating the atrocities, they're just creating a new timeline where those atrocities don't exist. So I don't know. It's when you dig too deep into these time travel thought processes, it does make my head hurt.
And that's and at some point you have to say that is a paradox. Yes.
Yeah,
There is no
absolutely.
solving it.
But taking that, you know, keeping running with that thought process, if you read a comic book and it starts getting you to think along those lines, isn't it really doing a good job of presenting itself? You know, and then you start getting to the question of, well, is it presented well or is it presented in just a cliche fashion saying, hey, think about this? I think this is presented fairly well. I do find it interesting, and this was not intentional with the theme, that we're going to deal with petulant teenage attitudes. So,
Petulant teenage, isn't that a bit redundant?
well, I find that you know, rumors that petulance is limited to teenage is
There is
are
that
greatly
too.
exaggerated,
There
having
is
no children left
that
in the teenage
too.
level.
I I do,
Yeah.
but on that, I do like his anguish. And I mean, there are a couple, panels. He's sweating. He's almost crying. He's very, very upset by this conundrum. Van Zastro slash Major Victory. So I like that. I think it's portrayed well. It's not the deepest coverage of that issue, but it's there. And like you said, I think it's handled well.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, those are my thoughts. Any you have anything else on this? All right, so you want to rate?
Yep. Now you were teasing me badly, but I will say I thought this was a pretty good cover. It's not the most complex or detailed comic book cover out there, but I think there's a less is more sort of thing that's happening in this case. The faces are properly emotive. It does hint at what's to come inside the issue. Again, I don't know these artists very well, Weston Montana, but I think they did a pretty fine job on this. I'm going B plus. I like it. I think it's bold. I think it stands out. Interior art, again, we talked about the 90s ness of it. I've seen comics where that is worse. So I think it's a step down from the interior from the cover, maybe B plus sort of thing. I think the story, in a way, it does try to reset the storyline to be friendly to readers, picking up the issue based on the new creative team or whatever. I don't think it fulfills that mandate. I mean, there are flashbacks that are trying to explain and sort of bring you up to speed a little bit, but there are a lot of moving parts, a lot of people, different timelines. So it was a little confusing. For sure. And it also seemed like the vast majority of the action scenes or the battle scenes were in flashbacks themselves or talked about, in the current day, in other words, not a lot happens action-wise. There's some setup, but there is some character drama, like we talked about. Tough decisions to make, some yelling and screaming among the teammates, but not a lot of action. So it's not great, but it's not bad either. Trying to ask a difficult question, it does move on pretty quickly from that, but that's fine too. So I'm not sure that dramatic buildup was really paid off well, at least in this as a standalone issue. So story, a C ish. I do place more priority on the story, like you said. I weigh that more heavily. It's like the cover and the story, the cover and the interior art, those are like quizzes, but the story is the final exam. So it has a more impact on the grade, if you know what I'm saying. So overall, B minus.
Okay, we're not too far apart on this. I think the cover is pretty much a standout. I don't know that it's one of the best covers of this series, but it is one of the most eye-catching covers. And I think, that's something you want if you're going to have it on the stands or in the comic store and you want people who haven't picked up the series, you want them to see it and say, "Ooh, that looks dynamic, and that looks interesting, and maybe I can pick that up." So in that regard, I think it absolutely accomplishes its goal. My biggest issues with it are twofold. I don't like the costume of Major Victory, and again,
I get
that's an
that, yeah.
editorial decision, not an artistic decision. And I don't like the fact that Charlie 27 on the cover appears to be a teenager himself. I don't
Yeah.
believe that
Okay.
that's what he is. So I think, he should look just a little bit more like a humanoid version of the Thing, in my mind. So I'm not as crazy about just the way he's drawn there.
We're just
The
trying to
white
get
background.
petulance all over it on everybody.
Yes. The white background is normally something that I criticize because it, to me, sometimes just having a solid color background is an indication to me of laziness. I don't think that's the case here. I don't think they left the background white because they didn't feel like drawing a background. I think they left the background white because they wanted the the actual images to pop a little bit more on the reader and almost create a more three-dimensional look to it. And I think it does serve that purpose. So I think it's a pretty good cover overall. And I'm going to say it's a B. I think it's solid cover. The interior art, again, I think it's a little step up from the style of the 90s that we so often see. In particular, the way Starhawk is drawn with the star field and everything, I think is really well done. So I'm pretty happy with the interior artwork overall. And I'm going to give that a B as well. The story does jump around a lot. And rating it as somebody who just read this issue as opposed to, you know, reading the series, it does take a little effort to kind of stay with where the story is going. But that's okay. I don't mind having my brain tickled a little bit to have to cause it to work. And I like the ending with Captain America making his dramatic appearance. So I'm gonna say a B minus on the story. I think it's pretty solid, and that might be subject to change when I reread or when I read the entire series. But based on this one issue alone, I'm gonna say a B.
It would and I'm be gonna an, give the book overall. It would be an interesting to hear you revisit it down the road.
Well, I may ask That'd you to do that with me when the time comes. But yeah, so I'm giving a B minus to the story, and overall I'm going to give the book a B. I think it's pretty solid, and it has not in the slightest bit soured me on the idea of reading through the series, and that's, you know, that's
something.
A risk.
That is
a risk. So I will be getting there. I just looked while we were talking. I looked at my CLZ page. I have 5 issues I need to complete the series, and I could probably find them if I'm willing to pay whatever for them. Yeah, but I like I said, I'm quarter 50-cent dollar. So any of if I find them in any of those bins, I'll pick up those 5. But if it's in a bin beyond that, it's going to stay in the bin beyond that.
Is there any reason in particular why any of those issues would be expensive? Is there some weird special thing happening somewhere along the line? Crossover,
no,
first
so.
Appearance, blah, blah, blah. Okay, good.
Just when I looked at the app, I did see that issue 39 has whatever her name is, the female Wolverine looking character. The cover shows her, and it's got a Wolverine skeleton, like the Terminator type skeleton. and the thing says on there, she was looking for her ancestor Wolverine. She found more than she bargained for. So she is an ancestor of Wolverine, to answer the question that I posed earlier. So that's it for Guardians. I chose, in response to the professor's choice, and I chose Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes number 225, which actually the technical title of that series is just Superboy. It is not Legion of Superheroes. But I think it's issue 231 that it actually formally becomes that.
And then I think it runs to 263 before
eventually
it becomes Legion.
Yeah, it becomes just Legion, and then from there it gets canceled, and they start the Baxter run.
Yeah.
So I took issue 225, which has a cover date of March of 1977. The price tag is a whopping 30 cents. The cover is by Mike Grell, who I consider to be the prime Legion artist, followed by Keith Giffen. But Grell is, to me, the number one Legion artist.
Wholeheartedly agree on both parts.
And then I guess number 3 would be Dave Cockrum. So I do have some favorite artistic bits by on Legion series. The cover shows a close-up of Superboy locked in battle with Wildfire as Shadowless is trying to intercede. The story is titled, And Who Shall Lead Them? It's written by Paul Levitz, penciled by Jim Sherman, who I'm not really very familiar with, much like the last issue I was not familiar with the artist, inked by Bob Wiacek, and edited by Denny O'Neill. The year is 2976, and Superboy is mad, flying towards Wildfire and claiming that he was cheated out of the Legion leadership. Wildfire says that Superboy needs a slap across his face to bring him to his senses, and Mon-El quickly complies, giving the Teen of Steel the back of his hand right in the chops. Dream Girl calls for a cease of hostilities and states that they've changed the rules and that Superboy can't be the leader because he's only a part-time member. Superboy rejects that information and storms off like a petulant teen. You getting the theme here? Following the inauguration ceremony, the team is called into action due to an attack by the Resource Raiders, a spacefaring gang of thieves bent on stealing the Earth's resources and creating havoc. The Legionnaires come upon the site of the attack at a dam and swing into action, rescuing civilians and attacking the offending ship, but to no avail. Wildfire tries another tact. He tries to blast the dam itself to shut the source for the raiders, but Superboy suddenly appears and blocks the blast. He and Ultra Boy combine and fling the raider ship out of the Earth's atmosphere. Had he flung it towards the sun as his older self would have, he would have solved the problem. Superboy then shows that the raiders had sprayed explosive powder on the dam, and it would have caused a major explosion if Wildfire had completed his blast. However, later on, Ultra Boy says that there was no powder, and that Superboy had to have planted it. Dream Girl uses her Deanna Troi-like powers to advise the others that Superboy was up to something. Dun, dun, dun. Meanwhile, Superboy is sneaking around where the team's uniforms are kept. He's confronted by Wildfire, and the two begin to fight. Minutes later, the raiders return to Earth, and the team rushes to meet them. Sans Superboy and Dream Girl takes note that Wildfire is fighting in a similar way to the way Superboy would, and he's not leaving an energy trail as he flies as he normally would. The raiders then swing around and blast Wildfire and are preparing to blast Dream Girl when Superboy rushes in and blocks the blast. She questions whether he had been in Wildfire's costume, and he admits that he would have been, because the computer predicted that the new leader would be blasted on his first mission, and he thought he had the best chance of surviving the blast. But Wildfire had convinced him that he actually had a better chance and that there was kryptonite in the beam. So as it turns out, only Wildfire's costume was destroyed, since he is pure energy. The story ends with Ultra Boy declaring that they're going to get information from the raiders and have a showdown. And that's to be continued. Now, my biggest conundrum in this issue is if Wildfire convinced Superboy that their blast would have some sort of kryptonite base to it and it would have killed him, why is he, 2 seconds after the initial blast comes, able to block the blast that comes for Dream Girl? Professor, with your collegiate prowess, can you answer that question?
I'm going to go with petulant teenager. Wait, is that an answer? Is that one of the options?
I'll take petulant teenagers for 500, Alex.
See, to me, I thought the moral of the story was that 1,000 years in the future, AI is not much more helpful than it is today.
That's a very good point. Yeah, how is AI predicting that the team leader is going to get blasted anyway? What information base is it putting that together to make that hypothesis? Whoever the leader is going to get blasted.
I'm pretty sure that's more Dream Girl's power anyway, to predict the future. And why did they need the computer for that? Because she is pretty good at coming up with dreams and prophecies that are not quite what you seem. So I'm not sure why the computer was involved at all.
Is Dream Girl the precursor to Deanna Troi? I'm sensing hostility, Captain. Really? Good thing we have you on the bridge.
Was it the battle horn and the axes that they're swinging and the war chant? Was that what gave it away, Deanna? Was that what you sensed? Yep.
But, you know, I think Dream Girl is more there because she just has a sexy outfit.
No, you're not saying that.
I see. I don't, you know, I need to reread some of my old Legion issues because I'm not really sensing what her purpose is on this team.
Especially when you have Shadow Lass there, because I'm pretty sure her purpose is to wear a skimpy outfit. I guess she wears the skimpy outfit at night and Then Dream Girl.
She has an even Dream skimpier Girl's outfit.
Dreaming, while Dream Girl is dreaming, she takes over the role of fan service icon. Got it. Okay. So they have that covered 24 hours a day between them. Okay. Now it makes, you know, sometimes you just need to talk these things out, Paul.
I've always found Wildfire to be a fascinating character, though.
Being made
of pure energy and then just having a containment suit that makes him have a humanoid presentation. So I always found that to be interesting. And then it's, you know, we finished the story with that next issue is going to be the dazzling debut of Dawnstar, who ends up being his love interest. Mm-hmm. As it goes on. So that's also interesting, is, you know, how does a being of pure energy have, you know, that it's well done as far as creating some conflict and emotional conflict, which I kind of like that. But the story itself in this issue is built on a foundation of soft clay.
Yeah.
There is very little reality to this whole thing about Superboy having his little hissy fit because he's not the team leader. You know, why wouldn't he just come out and tell them? You know, this is something that my wife and I have come across, because we have become a big fan of binging TV shows.
Right.
And for a while, we binged a lot of the evening soap operas, Dallas and Dynasty and Knots Landing, and, you know, all these different shows.
And one conversation.
Ultimately, a lot of the conflict would not exist if one of the people just took the person who they're supposed to be in love with and told them the truth as to what's going on. Now, this isn't that, because there isn't the love thing, but if Superboy just said, you know what, I ran a simulation and it looks like the leader is going to get zapped, and we need
he can say, I'm best equipped to handle that.
Yeah. And then if Wildfire says, oh no, because I know that they have a kryptonite basis, which how the hell he knows that, I don't know. But you know what? It's why would you keep it to yourself?
Yeah.
Because you're looking to be a martyr? Is that what it is? I don't know.
And instead you go down the road of election collusion. I'm just not sure that's where we need to be here, Paul. Back to the Bins is a non-political show, so I don't know why you brought that topic up.
Well, I apologize to all our political listeners.
Well, as any fan of the Legion knows, that team loves their charter, they love their rules, and they love their elections. So the fact that they built a little bit of a subplot on a, I'm going to say, legalistic look, this is one you could have solved. That's the thing. You could have solved this. They needed Esquire Lad. That's really who they needed. A paralegal boy. That's who they needed.
That's my one skill is billing. Because you need to have one power that's unique on the team.
That's right. Now, there was another connection between this issue and my issue. First off, was there specifically reason why you picked 225?
Not really.
A random Legion issue.
It was a random Legion issue. It just turned out that Petulance was the name of the game. but then again, you know, when you're dealing with books about teenagers, maybe that's not so difficult to find on a random basis.
But the other connection is that both stories are basically a creative team or a writer's debut, because this is Paul Levitt's first story for the Legion.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And he stayed with it till this run ended in, I guess, the 350s or something like that. And then he went on, you know, to write Legion for a heck of a long time in many different iterations and varieties. But this was his first issue. Roy Thomas, I guess, was writing it before, and he had just zooped off to Marvel. I'm remembering the chronology right. But yep, Paul Levitt's first work. Yeah. And by the way, he was 20 at the time.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I first started to read comics seriously, I was probably 11 years old. And I was reading Jerry Conway's Spider-Man at the time. That was like my my entry level drug. And then at some point, I don't remember what year it was, but at some point after social media became big, I was friends with Jerry Conway on Facebook, and it was his birthday. And I realized he's only like 10 years older than me. And I
Right.
messaged him, happy birthday. And I said, back when I started reading comics, you were so much older than me than you are now. And his response was, just wait, you're going to pass me up soon.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's funny you should mention that because my wife just had her birthday. And when we met, she was actually older than me. But
And that's it's changed.
not now, from what I can tell. Not now.
I'm not surprised.
Paul, I'm just a tenured professor of finance at a large state university. I'm not that good with numbers. I don't understand.
That's the old Abbott and Costello routine, where he, which I think is just a vaudeville thing. I don't think they created it, but because Abbott's saying, you meet a girl, and I don't remember what the ages were, but it was like, you're 20 and she's 10, so you're twice her age, and you want to marry her, but you can't marry her because there's too much of an age difference, so you wait at 10 years. Now you're 30 and she's 20, so she's now you're only a third older than she is. And he's going through like a couple of times, and then he says, yeah, pretty soon she's going to pass me up. And then his response was, but then she'll have to wait for me. And Abbott says, why should she wait for you? I was nice enough to wait for her. And anyway, I find I started buying Legion issues about, I think it was 235 is my first issue that I bought as a collector. I've since filled in, many of the earlier issues. But some of these are still a blind spot for me. Like this particular issue, I don't recall ever having read this before. And again, the big thing to me is the premise is silly. If you eliminated the silly premise, it's really kind of okay at that point. So you have to kind of just put the blinders on to, why Superboy's doing what he's doing.
One of the more recent times, last times that you and I talked here on Bins, I had finished up this Legion run. I think it starts with 197 and wherever it goes to. I'd backfilled in, so I have that complete run again, which I read at some point when I was a kid. I think I started probably maybe 10 issues before this. And a lot of it was that those Mike Grell covers. He was the first artist whose work I recognized, the first name, that I noticed on a, he's got that distinctive signature on the cover, first artist whose name mattered to me. So I've been, a fan of his basically since this era, buying and collecting these when they were fresh. So I can't be unbiased, certainly about that cover. I love the cover.
I
and it's
find Mike
just
Grell's work to
distinctive.
be
It's Mike
phenomenal.
Grell.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Mike Grell is up there on, my favorite artist lists with a lot of the a lot of a lot of the classic greats. And Ruth and Darren have said if we're ever at a con together when he's there, they're going to bring me over to introduce me,
Nice. Yep.
because
Super
they
nice
have
guy.
developed a relationship with him.
Yep. Super nice guy.
So, I mean, again, story weaknesses aside, I thought this was a pretty solid read.
Agreed.
And I enjoyed it. I have a soft spot for the Legion in
Yes.
general. So I'm willing to forgive them soft spots in the story or weaknesses in the story. But anyway, I guess we can rate this one now. And I think the cover is solid. It's catchy. It's Mike Grell. I don't know that it's Mike Grell's best. I've seen Mike Grell do better than this, but I've seen a lot of people do much worse than this. I would say it's a solid B to a B plus cover. It's not iconic, but it's really good. I like the way Mike Grell draws Superboy. He doesn't draw him as a man. He draws him looking younger, but he also doesn't draw him looking like an 8-year-old. And I find that some artists
That's
have
tough.
trouble with that area in between. He looks to me like an older teen, maybe 19, 1920, somewhere around there. And I think that's the perfect age for people on the Legion. You don't want them younger than that, really. The interior art, I'm not familiar with this artist either. But it seems to me like he's trying to emulate the Mike Grell style, and to an extent he's succeeding well. I don't think he's as good as Mike, but he's pretty good. So I'm going to say a B minus on the interior art. And the story, I enjoyed reading it, but I have to take points off for just the silly premise and the fact that Superboy takes the shot that they're saying would have killed him 2 seconds after, and it does him no damage whatsoever. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a C, because it's kind of built on a foundation of clay. But overall, I'll give the book a B minus.
I'm probably a little bit higher than you in each one of those because partly because I just finished off, like I said, collecting this run. And this was the first chance I had to read one. And thanks to you, I think I might dig back in and, sort of take seriously as a reading project working through this particular run. So I was jazzed by this. I was excited by this. And I love that cover. It's great. That is my completely biased opinion. I'd probably give the cover an A minus. Again, I've had this issue various, I guess probably technically a couple of times in my collection. So I've seen that cover for decades. Interior art, yeah, I mean, it's always a bit of a letdown compared to a Mike Grell cover. But it tells the story. I did kind of like the design. The alien-looking resource raiders, which is a pretty silly name, but they looked pretty alien-ish. So I thought that worked. Certainly, I think the characters were on model and all of that. And I don't know if we discussed this, Paul, but some of those Legion ladies are pretty, well, pretty. They're pretty. And he. Handle but he handled them well. I know that didn't quite sound right when I the way, but so I give the art BB minus ish. Yeah, the story, and I'm also I had known that this was Levitz's first story. I had done a little bit of that research, before reading it, so I'm probably giving him the benefit of the doubt. Believe me, Paul, I know poor writing by a 20-year-old when I see it.
I'm
Okay.
sure you do. I'm sure you've
So,
experienced a lot more poor writing by 20-year-olds than quality writing by
believe me,
20-year-olds.
this is some of the best writing by a 20-year-old I've run across in a
Fair
long
enough.
time. But I thought he, the Legion is such a huge cast. You do have to narrow it down for your specific story. It's got five, six characters here. In the roll call, and most of them, except Dream Girl for some unknown reason, they all kind of use their powers. So everybody seems to be a part of the story and all that. The characters get their chances to shine, but like you say, it is built on a problematic foundation, as we might say these days. So it is on the low end, B minus. So not a classic issue by any means. Like you said, a random pull from this run of Legion, but I think it shows a few moments where you could see where Levitz would be going. And there's a bit of it, given the impact that he's going to have on the Legion going forward, it's an important issue. Especially for DC here in the Bronze Age. So I'd overall give it a, I'm in a good mood, Paul. I'm an easy grader. You know that. I'd
Your
give it,
students know that.
I was gonna give it a B minus, but thinking about it, I think I'm gonna start this reading project. So by definition, that has to bump it up. if it's wanting me to read,
to get extra credit,
to read this, exactly, extra credit to a B.
That's fair. So, two books, neither one like a classic, but both intriguing enough to have us wanting to read more.
Yeah, they
I think
got the
something to be
job
said for
done.
that.
Got the job
Yeah.
done.
As did you, my friend.
I do refer to that as the Paul Spitero rule. Does reading
Okay.
issue one make you want to read issue two?
Yeah,
That's
I think that's an important
sort of
factor.
it, yeah.
So, thanks for coming on and making the time. Why don't you tell everybody where they could find you?
Well, I certainly will
So
do
don't give
that.
your exact address because they may be
One
knocking on
seven
your door.
three four two. Wait, what? Well, obviously, thank you, Paul. Always appreciate the invitation. Also want to just take this chance to thank Scott, Dr. Bill, Dave, probably Gene Hendricks, Chris Tyler, the Sutherlands, Luke, for all being unavailable to record today. So
I have a list right now with all those names crossed off before it
I
gets to
know where I
you.
stand. Know where I stand. No, actually, no, what is it they say in sports sometimes, Paul? We're both sports fans. What's the greatest ability? Availability.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's
And,
very true.
but at, no, actually, this, as we record this, 7 minutes ago at high noon, all the grades for the spring semester became official and final. So I am spending my first bit of official summer with you, buddy, with you.
With the listeners.
And I guess semi halfway seriously, I can send that message out to all our podcasting friends, especially here during the summer. If anyone's looking for someone to record with at like 11 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, I'm probably free for the next few months. I'm just throwing that out. I'm probably free.
Well, there's a good chance that you and I will do this again before the listeners hear this,
That's right. That's right.
because we do have a little bit of a window before we get to this being posted. Anyway, where can they find you when they're
Yes,
looking for
yes,
you?
yes. Most of our work can be found at the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, which is run by me and M over there. You can find my solo shows, the legendary Quarterbin Podcast, Doom Speak, which I'm probably going to have to do a special episode, repost this audio because of that one Guardians of the Galaxy panel. Alan's Eyes and Ears, and various other shows over there. Relatively Geeky. Thank you, Paul.
And after we sign off from this, we're going to be making plans for when we're going to record next for me to appear on that prominent network. So keep your eyes open for that, and probably, you'll either want to download it or avoid it like the plague. Either one. But in the meanwhile,
And
ups.
thanks to the space-time continuum, that future episode may come before this.
That is very possible. And then you're making my head hurt again. I'm going to go kill baby Hitler now. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.